my goodness, I could listen to that all day long. Why? Because it is Sonny Stitt with Blues Greasy. This is one of my all-time favorite tunes and one of my all-time favorite musicians. So he plays on this song, both on this tune, I should say, both alto sax and tenor sax. And this was recorded in 1957. Bobby Timmons on piano, Edgar Willis on bass guitar, and Kenny Dennis, sorry, on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Nutrice Lead. And we're trying to figure out where exactly things are today. We've gone through that wretched experience called the State of the Union Address. We had the equally dreadful response on the part of the Democrats, just vapid response. And now it seems that everybody's trying to find a way to settle down and go somewhere where I don't know. But they have to go somewhere because, well, that's the nature of things. Right after the State of the Union address, the nation settles back into some kind of a routine. What is it? How are you reading it? What is happening? In the meantime, while there is this distraction, and I'm still referring to the State of the Union address and the fallout from it, people are going to be talking about this for some time, it places the focus, or it gives enough time for Trump to reorganize himself, if there's such a thing. And that is that, A, he's being encroached upon, and I'm putting it mildly. Before the address, he had about almost 20 different legal cases moving against him. A couple more, of course, would be added to that after the address. But he's up to his eyeballs in legal matters that he has got to deal with. He cannot avoid, he just can't avoid the unfinished business or the finishing business of Mueller, the Mueller probes, the various Mueller probes that should be coming to fruition. He's got the matter of a divided country, a divided Congress, and in the world view, a divided set of what should I say, focuses or foci, to be very correct. What is he doing with this country? Where is it going? To whom is Donald Trump accountable? These kinds of questions are gathering steam. And we have an invigorated, allegedly invigorated opposition. The Democratic Party is beginning to enjoy its position now as a real opposition party. And they've already indicated they don't intend to make the next 2 years comfortable for Donald Trump. So all this is happening. There's a lot of movement, and then in some instances, there's no movement at all. And what we are seeing in that regard is what is happening to these 800,000 government workers summarily furloughed. And on top of the furlough, which means they're not getting paid, They are restricted from looking for other employment because that would now constitute an infraction. Because technically, even though they're not getting any paychecks, and they haven't been for more than a month now, the fact is they're still seen as, quote, employed, unquote. So they can't go out and get another job. The suggestion has come from Trump and his Secretary of Commerce. What is the problem? Why don't you make use of things that are available to you to tide you over? Food banks. Go ask your neighbors for food. Go to your bank and get a loan. And soon enough, things will be right back to normal. But in the meantime, let us not forget that this was a totally illegal action by the president. Completely illegal. As far as I believe, it's totally illegal. The president gets up one morning and decides that how he's going to get his way with extracting funding for this wall is not by having discussions with Congress and other, to follow the rules of if you want this much money, you want $5.7 billion. And then again, let's keep in mind that that's just for a wall. They're not mentioning that that's not all the money that would be needed. They're not mentioning that. You have to have courts built to process these applications. You'll have to have some kind of accommodation for people crossing the border and who are awaiting processing. They have to be put up someplace, so that's another expense. And you have all the personnel expenses. So your $5.7 billion is not the total budget here. But the central question is, this man has gotten away with conducting a national stick-up. As I said before, it's like a guy deciding he needs some money, so he goes to a bank and announces a holdup. And then on top of that, he says, if he doesn't get what he wants, and what he wants is all the money in the bank. If he doesn't get the money, he'll kill everybody. Now, there was just a glimpse of a report. I think it lasted probably half a day about a TSA worker, an airport security a worker who, quote, now this is how the news that should know better, this is how they reported it, that he fell. He fell to his death in the atrium of a hotel where people begin to line up to be processed for boarding and so forth. Now, you know, that was a suicide. And more than likely, it is linked to the stresses of getting no money but being compelled to work. There are people who are literally at their breaking point because the president, as a dictator, would do, decided he alone should make this decision. And he targets the federal workers and he takes their paychecks. And we have gone for more than a month without any movement in Congress against a president on this matter. And worse, I don't see the unions. I've talked about this before. I don't see the unions doing anything to impress upon this administration. It will not, they will not tolerate this unprecedented move against workers by a president. 800,000 people are not getting their checks. The president is getting his check, although he says he's giving it to charity. His children, the so-called advisors that he has, they're getting a paycheck. Members of Congress are getting a paycheck. So maybe they're taking it easy. This does not constitute an urgency. But what does constitute an emergency, a national emergency, Donald Trump says, is the crossings at the border, specifically the southern border with Mexico. Something is wrong here. A president can do this, wake up in the morning and decide, all right, you guys don't have, this is beyond mass firing. Okay. This is major, major firings or furloughs, imposed furloughs on, and I think we could agree on this, these people have no reason to be targeted this way. They're not getting paid. They're being ordered to continue working. They can't go look for a job. They have responsibilities. They have mortgages. They have tuition. They have all kinds of bills to pay. And you're going to tell me that this country remains governable in this condition, with this president committing such an atrocity? And the members, this is, like I said, there's no distinction between Republicans and Democrats here. Their thing is, nothing is interfering with their paychecks. So they could stick it out a little longer. And we see the hardship that 800,000 of our fellow citizens are going through for no fault of their own. They didn't lose a paycheck because there is some kind of an action pending against them at work or some disciplinary action taken against them. None of that. They were doing their jobs. And then the next day, the jobs have declared that they must continue to work as per directives of the president, but they can't get paid. And why can't they can't get paid? Because he's not getting his way. And he is allowed. Never mind all the ideological differences they say they have, they are one on this matter, that they can do this. And it's okay, it's all right, it's okay to make people suffer like this. And again, I ask, you mean to tell me 800,000 people and their families are affected? And the United States remains governable, that there aren't people out in the street, and the unions are not calling for Donald Trump's head, saying you can't do this. On this alone, impeachment, you gotta go. This is not right. This is the action of a despot, of a dictator, of a person whose own sense of hate is so overwhelming, he doesn't even see the irrationality of his conduct, the unpredictability of his conduct, and how it is affecting people. Nothing was said about that worker who fell. The opposition should have seized on that. And he may not be the only one who would see no end to the suffering, no way out, because even while they're not getting paid, the bills are accruing. Their credit scores are ruined. 800. I mean, it still boggles my mind. I don't understand. Maybe we all, something was sprayed in the air while we were asleep, and we all lost our minds and our moral compasses. And we figure somehow or the other, it will work out. This is not, I'm borrowing the popular phrase here, this is not American. This is not an American thing to do, much less for an American president to do, and an American Congress to allow the president to do. But they could get up, as they did on Tuesday, and make all these sanctimonious speeches. And the president can speak without challenge about the state of the union when he is one of the principal causes of disunity, of massive needless suffering, and breach of contract with the American people. You're not supposed to do that. We have not seen this, not even in wartime. And again, things have gone back to normal. So something, maybe, like I said, maybe during, overnight, they sent some military planes to drop something in the air to anesthetize us, to make us lose our minds and lose focus on what we ought to be doing as fellow citizens. It's not a racial thing. It's not class. It's just basic principle. We have a renegade president, and no matter how many things he does that are contrary to the way we accept, we would accept it. Even if we disagree, we would accept, well, okay, the president is pushing for his own program on such and such. But the assumption is based on the president understanding that he has accountability. And that there is a way that these things are to be handled. So now that we're over the hump with the State of the Union address And things are still looking dicey for Trump. He needs an escape hatch badly. And he needs it now. And he has found it. And it's called Venezuela. Let's have a nice little war in our own neck of the woods. And we will teach those brown people a lesson. We're going to give them a problem. So now he's ratcheting up the war cries. Military intervention in Venezuela, he says, is, and he, this is how he describes it, an option. An option. And he can use a word like that because, in fact, he understands that he has options. He's been given options. He's been given options by an impotent Congress and by us, the citizens, who tolerate this kind of crazy behavior. And arrogate to him powers that he does not have. And again, do you imagine you working at a company in which the owner of the company or the president of the company, from day to day, from literally hour to hour, you have no idea what is about to happen, and what you will be required to do to respond? You're not the owner of the company, but the owner of the company is behaving in a way that makes it compulsory that you take on the burden, in effect, of solving his problems that he created. So this is the distraction now. We look at the United States while Trump is trying to figure out, Trump and his sons, you know, the very brilliant Trump family. They're the most brilliant people on the planet, and that entitles them to rule, literally rule the world. They don't have to seek counsel and advice. They don't have to get permission. They don't have to follow any rules. They make the rules. And now we're facing the very real possibility that the next major disaster that this president is about to involve this entire country in is military intervention in Venezuela. He's already openly declared that he supports the insurgent or an opposition leader, Juan Guaido, 35 years old, who has managed to get the blessing of a large percentage of Venezuelans and other countries to take over Venezuela. It's like everybody has gone crazy. Nobody's, you know, places, even like Sweden and Canada. It's as if they don't have any concept of democratic rule. Whether you approve or don't approve of a leader, you let the people, you let a process go forward that addresses the problem internally. They are a sovereign state, whether you like it or not. And should there come a time when other people are to be involved or Other people are asked to be involved. Other organizations are asked to be involved. Well, then they'll deal with that at that time. You don't jump in and urge the assassination and the removal of an elected president of a sovereign state. You just, it's like nobody's paying attention to the casual crossing of lines and the ramifications of such actions. What if tomorrow some state or the other decides Trump has just gone too far? We're sending our military over to restore democracy in the United States. Well, how will that go over? This president has put 800,000 workers out of commission and is requiring them still to work without pay. And we see all these cases of corruption lined up against him. Obviously, he's no good. Obviously, he's got to go. And we're willing, based on the polls that are showing that Trump is sinking fast, we are mobilizing our military to support democracy in the United States. Now, how could that possibly be considered a good thing? But that's exactly what this country is doing. So, let's pause here for a minute and gather up our thoughts. What do you see, especially in light of the State of the Union address and, you know, all of that stuff that went with it? What is the way forward? What is the immediate impact you see? What do people have to prepare themselves for? What is the United States now, after this address, having been briefed by the president about all these things that he's doing that are achieving such great results for Americans? But I especially want you to think a bit how, with a political mind, the president cannot afford any downtime. He has to constantly keep the nation occupied with his many, many, many endeavors and successes. So there's got to be something always in play that would yield a result that can then be peddled to the people to make us all feel, well, you know, he's going through a tough time, but let's give him his space. Let's let him do his thing. That seems to be the attitude of the unions. More than a month has gone by, and we don't see any organized response by the unions over this atrocity. And it's massive, it's unprecedented, but most importantly, it's illegal. They are not responding in behalf, not even of their workers, let alone of the people of the United States. So all of this should be churning in your head as you give us your view of where exactly are we? What is likely to happen? How do we go forward as a nation and individually? You know, who is reaching out to 800,000 people who are instructed by the president and by the secretary of commerce to go pound on your neighbor's door and ask for food. Go to some kind of a food resource center and beg for food when you had a job that covered your expenses and you managed your life. And then worst of all, go to a bank. Now that you have no job, you have no credit, you should go to a bank and get a loan and solve your own problem. Let's take this little break and come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888. Put on your thinking hats as you usually do. Let's hear what you see as the dilemma that we have now, right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and we're trying to figure out just where the heck are we and where this president of ours has put us. That's the task. John from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, how about you?
I'm hanging in there. Every day is a struggle to try and smile, you know? My problem with organizing is that the second that anyone organizes and gets more than a handful of people together, the powers that be will come in with jackboots and arrest everyone because that's the way they do it. But as far as an idea is concerned, I thought a great protest would be to march on your local military base, like Fort Dix, for example. Get as many people as you could possibly get with the courage to do that and go picket in front of the mess halls at Fort Dix and have them feed those people. I think that would be an interesting idea, don't you?
No, because you said you gave us the reason when you started. They have more ability to fight back than we do. So, you know, you take a calculated guess as to how you're likely to come out of a situation where all you want to do is protest, and the idea of a protest is to be seen. You are seen, and the people are seen as disapproving of the president. And this is not the military. The military is not the problem here. This is the president and Congress, the people who literally have the country in their hands every single day. They have to be brought to account. So it seems logical to me, Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, where the so-called laws are made and from where the country is run. It is the heart of the problem.
I can't
we don't
tell
want,
you.
We don't want to take, I don't think it is advisable to take on the military. They're not the problem. You go
you
where the problem
it
is. It's not with the military.
My thinking is that the government can afford to feed the military, but they can't. But they put the government itself on furlough, and those people, like you said, are having their lives ruined, not to mention not having anything to eat. So if you wanted to make a big wave, I think, you know, it was like Jane Fonda when she chained herself to one of those military bases. And she made a big statement at that point in time. It was like, I can't believe it, but John Kerry, did he throw his medals back? Which, by the way, I have no longer any respect for.
But that was a different time and a different issue.
Believe me.
The issue then was war and the war machine. Okay. But this is about a rogue president and a cowardly Congress. And they literally are now costing people their lives. And we have to make it, even if they don't think it's an issue. We think it's an issue. And we should have a way to express that visually and vocally. This is not right. We don't agree to this. This must not happen. This must end now. We don't have the power to go and write bills and laws and vetoes. But we can indicate that we are vigilant protectors, if you will, of people's rights. We are acting in their behalf. If the unions have punked out and they don't see why they should, by now, they should have led the way in resisting this. But they're very quiet. And it is amazing to me. We can't do that. We have to find a way to make our voices heard and to make ourselves seen as being in opposition to this kind of dictatorial behavior that we see now, and it has become normal and routine in our government. And it doesn't matter whether you're looking at Democrats or Republicans, and even progressives. And even radicals, leftists, nobody's taking this on. Thanks a lot, John, for getting us started today. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Therese, well, did you watch you clap the other night for Venezuela when he was speaking? Now, who clapped? His girl behind him clapped. She clapped. Nancy Pelosi clapped, okay? So
yes.
that is exactly what I expected, but I prayed wouldn't happen, because it means something that she is clapping in, you know, if she wants this war, she wants it too. They all want it. So when I heard the speaker before me, I think maybe before that, say that, if we go out there and we protest, we're going to get billy clubbed. Yeah, we are. We always have. That's normal. That always happens. It's been happening for years. It happened to many people before us too. I think it was in World War I when the soldiers wanted to get paid for their work, and they marched on Washington and they brought out, you know, the troops to shoot the soldiers. So it's not unusual, but it is something that I agree is very necessary. I think that if we're going to protest, we have to stop protesting on days where nobody's at work. I think it's ridiculous to protest in Washington on Saturday because everybody's gone. I think that we should be making their life very uncomfortable. It should be a weekday. It should be, you know, during a major meeting, something where we are going to be seen. I also know that protests are really ineffective now, because what they do, they learned from the 1960s to separate us, which they do. They put us in cattle corrals, so they separate us. You can't carry, you know, like a sign. It has to be on like a special kind of, you know, stick. And they're not as effective. But I was thinking about it and thinking, you know, in the early 1900s, the suffragettes did not have the TV to come out and show them, you know, doing their protests. And many other large protests were not covered with the media because it just didn't exist at the time. But I feel I've listened to so many people on the left that have also thrown in the towel on this thing, too. I think I was listening to a major speaker from the Green Party the other night saying, you know, basically, you know, it's a done deal. There's nothing we can do. Now, this also reminds me of Hitler and how when you were talking earlier, how many nations are getting behind this attack on this sovereign nation. And we stood in the wings and watched Hitler attack all the countries around him when he got started. We didn't come in until pretty late in the war. So I don't think it's unusual to see these other nations get in there and either not do anything or throw their support behind it. But I do think it's a shame either way. And I do think what Americans should know is it will be a problem for us. You know, it's going to be a problem because it's pregnant. This problem's pregnant with something down the line. It's not just going to be Venezuela. It's going to be Cuba, and then it's going to be, I think, Nicaragua. So this is going to be a big problem for us, especially when we go after Cuba, because this I don't think Russia's going to sit back for. Don't think they're going to sit back and say, that's okay, go in and help yourself. So I think that, you know, morally we have an obligation to get out there and do what we can. Do what's in front of us and do it smart. Do it. You know, I hate to go to protests where we have to be afraid to even show up on the day when people are at work. You know, I think we should be in Washington, D.C. And again, I don't want to just keep saying this over, but be there on a day when other people are there. And I do think that we have an obligation to protest this war. It's completely illegal. It's completely immoral. And I also think we should go after the Democrats that are supporting it. Because even sitting tacitly and doing nothing is throwing your weight behind it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gwen, for your thoughts today. From Mount Vernon, Lincoln, you're on the air. Hello, Lincoln.
Oh, yes.
Where are you? Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You said, where are we? And I said to you, we are right on schedule. And you ask about where was the voices concerning the fella who fell to his death. I ask you the same thing. Where were the voices when Setrich was shot in the back of the head? Where were the voices of the people of the DNC? And as we look at this, I think we cannot look at this myopically. We have to look at this, you know, like globally. Look at all the people who were cursing Trump. All the leaders of the world, Merkel from Germany, the Canadian Prime Minister, the French Prime Minister, the Parliament of England, and the leader of England. Look at Australia. All of them are behind Trump. So in other words, what they're saying is, we are just like him. We just don't like the fact that he behaves uncouthly and therefore blatantly shows what we really are. So I say to you, we are right on schedule. The Bush administration was just as much a renegade government as this one. When you look at the Democrats, you know, when you look at Bernie Sanders, I heard him talking about the Venezuelan thing, and his response to it was just as similar as his response to Israel in Palestine and the invasion of Libya. He made an excuse for it. First of all, he says some stupid thing like, Maduro is not perfect and he's a dictator. Maduro is not no dictator, and Maduro did not cause any problem in Venezuela. It was the strangulation by the sanctions which caused the problem. They have been tying the hands of Maduro, just like they tried to tie the hands of Chavez, just like they tied the hands of Mugabe, of Zimbabwe, and then how us, the idiots, we people who don't understand the intricacies of things and the global ramifications, we respond in this very sophomoric ways, you know, like freshmen to politics. And I think it's a lot of what's going on is much like, for example, even the so-called yellow vest in France. It was instigated by the CIA, and that was related to Macron speaking about supporting the Iranian move.
All right, but you're giving us a grand overview, which is nice to have, but we have a specific question for you to address. Why don't you address it? What happens now?
So what I'm saying is we, the people, have been standing by watching this. So I say to you, when are we going to protest? What are we going to protest about? Who are we going to replace Trump with? That's what I'd like to know. Which Democrat are we going to replace Trump with? First of all, we have to decide on that. We have to decide what are we going to put in place of Trump. And we haven't decided on that. So therefore, it means that we're all a bunch of jokers talking about protest. Protest what? To put back what?
Idea, we're not organizing a protest. I hope you appreciated that. These were ideas. So it's not the beginning of a movement of any sort. We're looking at a situation and we're discussing ways in which it can be addressed. These situations, because it's more than one. We have the U.S. now saying, you know, military intervention in Venezuela is, as Trump euphemistically said, is an option. And we know how this works. He has every reason to become even more irrational because of what's facing him. He's got lawsuits, he's got investigations, he's got a cabinet that is fractured. He's got lots of problems. What he needs and what he potentially has is a way to gain ground by doing something equally irrational, which is to militarily intervene in Venezuela. We've seen that he's gotten away with unprecedented and undemocratic and illegal action by putting on furlough 800,000 fellow citizens and compelling them to work without pay. And he's gotten away with that. So given all these things that are in play at the moment, what do you think is perhaps a reasonable approach to addressing these problems?
The reasonable approach is, first of all, we have to compartmentalize, and after we compartmentalize, then we have to put everything together. We have to address the whole body. I'm not departing from the topic, but just, and I'm going to leave you with this, and to show you how skewed everything is, even the so-called investigation. I was listening to a speech by Putin a couple of nights ago, which might interest you. And Putin said, there was, during the time of the election, he said, Donald Trump was just another billionaire who came to Russia. He said, during that time, there was another billionaire. There was a fellow, I think his name was Browder. And he said, and Browder came here to Russia, and he made $1.5 billion. He said he didn't pay any taxes in Russia. And he said, and he took that $1.5 billion back to the USA. And he said, and he did not pay any taxes in the USA on that $1.5 billion. And then he added, and he said, and...
But you're not answering the question. You're taking us again on a scenic tour. I want you to deal with the question at hand specifically. Deal with it. What happens in your view?
What I'm saying to you, we have to stop looking for aspirins and instead look at the whole body. If a body is ailing, psychosomatically and you're giving it some kind of tablet, it will not heal. And what, like what I was just telling you.
Okay. Hello? But I'm simply asking. All these things are true. And you know, you're going to give us the big picture. But what we're asking now is, how in your head are you putting these things together that offers something of a plan or something of a possibility of what might be next? What is it? Rather than give us an analysis of the problem, which we already understand. We accept a lot of what it is you've said as where we start, but it's not an answer. I'm asking, what ideas do you have as an answer, as a possible solution?
Plan for 2020. That's the best answer. Plan for 2020 to make sure we don't have any such a recurrence, not by Trump or Clinton or anyone. No, we don't want no quick fix. Plan for 2020. Plan for 2024. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. As you can see, this is a problem, because what we realize more than anything else is how limited we are in putting together a cogent response within our means to control that will contribute to a solution, that will not take us into the, drag us into the problem, but and in the wrong way. We, the citizens of this country, have no reason to be outraged at the fact that 800 million people are not receiving their paychecks and won't, because there's been no indication that this constitutes enough of an urgency to get this problem fixed. We have a president aided and abetted in sticking up this country simply to get his way. And we have no response. We have no solution from Congress. So they're saying to all of us, both Trump and Congress, they're all saying the same thing to us. We could do whatever the hell we want, and there is nothing you can do about it. That's the bottom line. We can decide on taking whatever course of action we want, no matter how illegal, no matter how wrong, no matter how immoral it is, no matter how much it makes our citizens suffer. So when a president acts like that, and when unions act like that, and when Congress acts like that, what they're saying to us is, you can't count on anything. There are no guarantees for you, and you are not safe. This is not a safe government. This is not a safe country. When things like that could happen, and you don't see massive reaction, it should bother us, and we should continue to think about it, but more importantly, to figure out ways in which we can help solve this and bring this to an end and make the people who have done this wrong pay. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll join each other tomorrow. It's Free Your Mind Friday. We'll see you, and thank you so much for your thoughts today. Bye-bye.